This program is for entertainment and educational purposes and without warranty as to completeness and accuracy of the commentary or opinions. The opinions expressed are solely those of the host and not those of the sponsors or affiliate attorneys or this radio station. No attorney-client relationship is established by any response or commentary on a legal subject. Alabama law requires the following disclaimer. No representation is made that the quality of legal services to be performed is greater than the legal service of other lawyers. Welcome to Law Chat 24/7, a weekly show that reviews and discusses legal issues that impact you and our community. Sponsored by Boatler Richardson Wolf Injury Lawyers, proudly serving the citizens of the Alabama, Mississippi, Florida Gulf Coast since 1987. Now, your hosts of Law Chat 24/7, attorney Mark Wolf and his co-host Marion Boatler.
Good evening and welcome to Law Chat 24/7. I'm attorney Mark Wolf and my host is Marion Boatler in
Hello.
The studio. Did you have a good weekend?
I did. We had a wonderful Father's Day weekend and it was delightful spending time with my father and husband. So it was great. How about yours?
We had a wonderful time. Had all three kids in for time in a while. So on Father's Day, I had all three children home. And we had a great time, and the grandbaby,
Yay.
Who is turning one tomorrow.
Oh, how adorable.
So I have a happy birthday to wish out tomorrow to Elise.
Wonderful. And today I have two friends with a birthday, Natalie and Melissa. So happy, happy birthday.
Well, happy birthday to Natalie and Melissa, and happy birthday tomorrow to baby Elise, who will be 1 year old.
Oh, so sweet.
We really had a good time. It was a lot of fun having the family in and spending time at the house and just ate a lot of food, probably too much. Had to get up and run this morning to try to run off some of those calories. But
great times. That's wonderful.
Wonderful time. All right. Well, we're going to get our show started this evening. Just go ahead and remind everybody how they can get their questions submitted and responded to on our show or on our website.
Absolutely. The website is lawchat247.com to submit your questions and get a response within 24 hours. Or you can go to Law Chat Facebook page, Law Chat 24/7, and through the Messenger app, put in your questions, or just send an email directly to Mark at mark@brwlawyers.com.
Yeah, and we've gotten a lot of good questions. The first two segments tonight, we're going to kind of focus on life insurance and life insurance issues and questions. And before we get to our first question, just a quick discussion about life insurance policies. Mm-hmm. There's basically two types of policies. You can have a term policy or what's called a permanent policy. Term policy is just that. It's just for a specific period of time, 10 years, 20 years, maybe even 30 years. And it's for a set premium over that period of time. You may pay $200 a month for a certain amount of coverage for 10 years, and then at the expiration of the 10 years, the premium amount will go up, or you can cancel the policy and start and find another term policy. You also have permanent insurance, which is a lot of times we call the cash value policies. That's like a whole life policy where you pay into a premium each month, and in addition to that premium for your insurance, you're actually paying a little bit extra that goes into, for lack of a better term, a savings account, and that policy accumulates a cash value. And at some point, you can, if you want to, take that cash out by a loan, or you can just surrender the policy and get the cash value back. So those were your two main types of life insurance. But about 30 years ago, maybe 40 years ago, the life insurance companies began playing with kind of hybrids. And they started putting together things called variable life, universal variable life, which were kind of a combination of a term, and they also had a cash value function. They would accumulate some cash value. Some of them let you put money into like mutual funds and different types of more aggressive investment vehicles. So with those variable funds, we've started to see or we've seen some problems over the years when people don't really understand exactly how they work. And that's our first question tonight is on that issue.
Sure. Yes, Mark. With question from Kathy, she has about life insurance premiums. She says, I've been paying my life insurance premiums for 22 years through an auto draft from my checking account. I got a letter from the insurance company saying the policy has been terminated for non-payment of premiums. I called them and they said my premiums had gone up about 2 years ago and that I've now depleted the premium supplement provision of the policy, and it's going to cost me over $750 to have the policy reinstated, and the premiums are now going to be three times as much. I don't understand how this happened. I've never missed a payment.
And this problem that Kathy had is one we see a lot of, mm-hmm. and I get a lot of calls from people related to these issues with a life insurance policy. And what happens, this what Kathy had was what we commonly call a variable life policy, and it may have been sold with the idea that after a period of time, she would have accumulated enough cash value so that she wouldn't have to pay premiums.
Mm-hmm.
That's sometimes a component of the sales pitch that went with these products. But what happens is, this is that hybrid. She had a 20-year fixed rate that was accumulating some cash value. The problem is she didn't realize that at the end of that 20-year period, the premium was increased. And under those policies, when the premium increases, the policy allows the insurance company to take the cash value and apply it toward the increased premium.
Mm-hmm.
So she may have been paying $200 a month from a deduction, and then 2 years ago her premiums jumped to $230 or $240. So the cash value was pulled out to pay that additional payment that wasn't being paid by the auto draft from mm-hmm. her bank. So here she was, she had been paying these premiums for 20 years
right.
regularly on auto draft, never missed a payment as far as she knew, and didn't realize that the product she had an increase in the premiums after 20 years. And unfortunately, some of these policies were sold with the idea that after a period of time, for example, after 20 years, you will have enough cash value that the cash value will pay the premium forever.
Mm-hmm.
And so after 20 years, you don't have to make premium payments anymore. Well, unfortunately, those projections didn't always work out right. And again, a lot of times people just didn't realize what they were getting and that they were going to be caught short. Then the policy cancels. Then they call to find out, and they find out they got to pay, in her case, $750 for reinstatement.
Right.
And, again, a lot of times clients just don't have that kind of money, and they're just find themselves stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a sad situation. But it comes back to, I mean, you really, really have to know about your policy. And you need to understand the terms of it and what it does and how it works,
mm-hmm.
especially if you have one of these variable life policies, because a lot of people think they're going to be set for life with this. And then all of a sudden, they find out, especially in one client, unfortunately, she was like 66 or 67, and she had this happen to her. And she's like, you know, this is when I really needed
exactly.
to have the life insurance for my kids.
Yes.
And unfortunately, I think her reinstatement was $3,000 or $4,000.
Mm-hmm.
She couldn't afford it. And, you know, she made paid those premiums for 20 years and found herself kind of on the short end of it. So very important. Look at your policies. Go online. You can Google a lot of information about life insurance policies
mm-hmm.
and get a lot of good explanations. If you have an insurance agent, use your insurance agent. Talk to them. But again, know the basics of the policies, whether you're looking for a term policy, whether you're looking for a whole life policy, or if you're looking for something in between, make sure you know what they are so that you can talk with an agent and understand what you're getting and how it's going to operate.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I think we're coming up on our Phil's giving us a sign. I think we got 30 seconds to our first break.
Yes. Well, would you like me to remind how to submit questions?
That would be wonderful.
Go to lawchat247.com or lawchat247 Facebook page, or just directly email mark@brwlawyers.com.
And we are been getting a lot of action through the Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people seem to like the Facebook page and like to submit the messages through Facebook. Also been getting a pretty good number of direct inquiries from the email. So,
well, good.
So we're staying busy. We have a lot of questions that we sort through each week to try to bring you information that's informative and entertaining.
That's right.
So, we'll be back after this break.
Welcome back to Law Chat 24/7. To be a part of the show and to have your legal questions answered, email Mark Wolf. Details online at lawchat247.com. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Wolf and Marion Boatler.
Welcome back to our second segment of Law Chat 24/7. Our first segment, we covered some general information about life insurance policies. And as we move into our second segment, we're going to handle some specific questions about life insurance. And before we get into those, just remind everybody how they can get their questions to us for a response within 24 hours.
Absolutely, Mark. You can submit questions through lawchat247.com or the Law Chat 24/7 Facebook page through the Messenger app, or just send a direct email to mark@brwlawyers.com.
Very good. And again, we had a lot of questions dealing with life insurance policies, so mm-hmm. we decided to use two full segments for those. First segment, we talked about the difference between term policies and whole life policies mm-hmm. or permanent policies. And now we're going to deal with some questions about life insurance benefits. So our first question is from whom?
From Brenda through the Law Chat 24/7 Facebook Messenger. She asks, I have a friend who has a life insurance policy on a handicapped man who recently died. He's been on SSI most of his life, and he had lived with her and her family for over 20 years. She's been paying $250 per year for the past 20 years for the life insurance. She talked to the insurance company, and they told her the government can take the money for funeral expenses. Is that right?
Well, and this is a very, very good question because it gets into the issue of what we call the trinity related mm-hmm. to life insurance policies. And what that means is there are three players in a life insurance policy. There's the insured, the person whose life is insured. There's the owner of the policy and the beneficiary of the policy. So we have three different players that can be in action. Normally, if you own the policy, you're also the insured. Mm-hmm. In other words, if I have a policy of insurance that I'm paying for on my life that benefits my wife, then I'm the owner and the insured. Mm-hmm. And when I pass away, the benefits go to her as the beneficiary. No problems. Very easy. And those benefits pass outside the estate. So the life insurance money goes directly to her, doesn't have to go through my estate, and it is basically hers without having to worry about estate tax or whatever. Where you run into problems and where Brenda has an issue is who owns the policy. Mm-hmm. If the gentleman who passed away owned the policy or was the insured on the policy but not the owner, then there could be issues of the policy. If he was the owner of the policy, then that policy might go into the estate if she's not listed as the beneficiary. Mm-hmm. So we get into this issue sometimes. Most of the time, your insurance benefits are going to pass outside the estate directly to the beneficiary. But again, if you have a different owner with a different insured and a different beneficiary, then it can get a little complicated. And mm-hmm. in some situations, the policy can become an asset of the estate, which may be attached by creditors of the estate. Now, coming full circle on this one, we kind of clarified it a little bit, and I think in this situation, the money will pass outside the estate for Brenda or for Brenda's friend, and there won't be any consequences. Mm-hmm. But we did get her in touch with somebody who could help give her a little bit more direction on this. But again, if you have a policy on somebody else's life mm-hmm. that you're paying for, you're the owner, mm-hmm. even though they're the insured. And if you die, that's an asset that may fall into your estate. So again, it gets a little complicated when you have a different owner than a different insured. But for the most part, as long as your policy and you pay the premiums and you have a beneficiary,
right.
then it's not going to be an issue or a problem. So
good.
And just real quick, when you mentioned SSI,
yes.
SSI stands for Supplemental Security Income.
Mm-hmm.
That's through the Social Security Administration. If you don't qualify for SSDI, Social Security Disability Income, you may qualify for Supplemental Security Income, which mm-hmm. is just a minimal level payment even if you've not paid into the Social Security system through your work history. So that's what we're talking about there. So.
Well, thank you. Well, good. Well, Mark, this question, the next question, was posted to your AVVO.com page, stating the question is, I smoked when I started my life insurance policy, but have not smoked since before 1978. Yet, my allotment to the insurance company continued for 41 years, charging me as a smoker. XYZ Life Insurance overcharged my military allotment $38 a month for 41 years. I estimate over $18,000 they collected from me unjustly. How can I recover that money? And actually, Mark, what is AVVO.com?
Okay, well, we'll start with that. That's a good AVVO.com is an attorney rating service that rates attorneys based upon your work history, based upon your teaching history, if you've done seminars or CLE programs, if you've published articles. All these different factors go into a rating that they assign to an attorney, and a lot of people search AVVO.com for an attorney, and you can actually correspond with an attorney or get questions answered through AVVO.com, and that's what this gentleman had done. But in unfortunately, in his situation, most of the time, it's upon you to notify the insurance company of a change in situation to get a reduction in the premium. And in this case, there was a question. He felt like they should have known because of some medical records. It was going to be awfully hard to show that and prove that, but it's generally incumbent upon you to make sure if you're rated as a smoker and you quit smoking, that you then talk with the insurance company or your agent to see if they can give you a reduction. And usually you have to be quit. I think it's they want you for, I'm trying to think, it's 6 months or a year to be tobacco free before they'll qualify you for a, quote, non-smoker rate. And again, in this situation, I just don't think we had much to offer him because of the situation of notification.
Right.
I mean, if he had had something where he had sent them a letter or faxed them something and said, hey, by the way, I haven't been a smoker in 2 years. Can you lower my rates? He might have had a little bit better argument. But and then we get into statute of limitations issues. So it's kind of a complex situation. But again, you got to know your insurance policy. So, all right.
Well, thank you. The next question, Mark, is was sent to us from your email account, mark@brwlawyers.com, and also involves life insurance. Daryl Lynn had a question about life insurance benefits. Excuse me. She asks, my husband died 4 months ago. He had taken out a policy of life insurance with me as the beneficiary about a year and a half before he died. I submitted a claim for benefits, but the company is investigating the claim because they said he died during the contestability period of the policy. Can you help me understand what they are investigating and how long it will take?
All right. We've dealt with this question before. This is a situation we commonly call this retroactive underwriting. A lot of times insurance companies will issue a policy and not do a full underwriting background on the person. And they have a 2-year period that if somebody dies during the contestability period, they can then look back at the application and all the details surrounding the application to determine if what was put on the application was correct. If somebody makes a mistake or puts something incorrect on the application, then that gives the insurance company a grounds to rescind the policy because they would say, well, had we known this fact, we would not have issued this policy. Therefore, it was a material misrepresentation. And a lot of times people will see that material misrepresentation and feel like the insurance company is accusing them of lying. And it's not even that, although that does happen sometimes. It can just be an innocent mistake. We had a situation where the insurance company thought our client had put the incorrect weight down on the application or the deceased, and that was an issue that they brought up during the contestability period, and they said had he put his correct weight down, they wouldn't have issued the policy. But again, we were able to work through that, but that's what's happening here. The policy's being investigated. They will normally look back and get records from 3 or 4 years, 5 or 6 years before the application, and they're just looking to see if the everything on the application as far as health-wise was correct. And again, obviously, if you've been diagnosed with terminal cancer, you try to go out and get a life insurance policy and you say, no, I don't have cancer, that's material to the insurance company's risk. And if you pass away, even if it's not from cancer, if you pass away during that 2-year period, they will look back. So.
Right. Well, good. Well, thank you. A lot of important information.
All right. And coming up on our next break, good two segments on life insurance. Mm-hmm. We'll get in some general law questions on the next segment.
Great.
Welcome back to Law Chat 24/7. To be a part of the show and to have your legal questions answered, email Mark Wolf. Details online at lawchat247.com. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Wolf and Marion Boatler.
Welcome back to our third segment of lawchat247.com. We just finished two segments dealing with a lot of issues about life insurance and life insurance claims. And if you have issues or questions about a life insurance claim or life insurance benefits, or if benefits have been denied, I have been handling those for about the last 10 years and always happy to consult with people about their questions. It's free consultation. So if you have an issue with a life insurance policy or you have a friend or family with an issue on a life insurance policy, please feel free to give me a call or send me an email at mark@brwlawyers.com. So,
Good. All right.
Now we get to move into kind of the general section, and we got some really fun questions for this next segment. So
We do.
Start off with our first question.
Okay, this one, it came through the lawchat247.com website and involves a wrongful death proceeds. Wrongful death benefits were given to the wife of her deceased husband. She used the funds to support herself and 3 minor children. Now, 22 years later, the children don't think they were given their share of the wrongful death proceeds. What can they do?
All right, and this is a situation where, in this case, with a little follow-up, we realized that the minor children were very small when this unfortunate incident happened to their father, and the proceeds were paid to the mother as the as the guardian.
Right.
And in this situation, a lot of times we see situations where people think that there's somehow a way to manipulate or hide or maneuver wrongful death proceeds. And a lot of times we see, unfortunately, after the, someone's death through an accident, family members being very, very distrustful of other family members, thinking, oh, this person's going to try to do this, or they're going to take the money here, or they're going to do this. We do have, in Alabama and in most states, a very good system in place to make sure that this process is fair to everybody. The heirs all are represented or looked out for during the process, and there's also requirements for accountings and bonds and different things to protect money. So it's not a situation where it's easy to, quote, squander or hide money from a wrongful death proceed. And in fact, a lot of times in earlier years, you would have to have a wrongful death settlement approved by the probate court. Now, they don't do that anymore. They just make sure that the heirs have been properly identified. But it, there's a system in place, and in this case, very easy to go back to the court, look at the records, find the records, and see that the money that was recovered was not squandered. And there, unfortunately, there was just didn't last as long as they had hoped. And but again, good question from the standpoint of we do have checks and balances in place that protect heirs and children. All of these children each had an attorney assigned to them during this process who reviewed and looked. It's called a guardian ad litem that looked after their interest and approved any settlement that, that happened. So in this situation, there was nothing improper. So
well, good. Well, our next question involves alimony and cohabitation. stating, "My ex and I divorced 5 years ago, and I've been paying her alimony and child support ever since. The divorce decree says the alimony will stop if she remarries or cohabitates with another man. About a year ago, she came out as a lesbian, and she now has her girlfriend living with her. Would that be considered cohabitation so as to allow me to stop paying her alimony?"
Now, this is a really, really interesting question. The starting point to answer this question is exactly what is alimony supposed to do? Alimony is supposed to be financial support to a spouse who may not have earned as much or may not have had the income level as the other spouse. So alimony is a financial support mechanism in addition to child support, and it's for the spouse. So even if she had been cohabitating with a man, the court would not just say, "Oh, you're cohabitating, therefore no more alimony."
Right.
The court would look at, okay, yes, it may be cohabitation, but is the new partner, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever, contributing financially to the ex-spouse? In other words, are they absorbing some of the financial requirements of the spouse? Are they paying for clothes? Are they paying for groceries? Are they doing things outside benefits to the ex-spouse? That's what the court's looking at in addition to the cohabitation. Are they paying, you know, utility bills? Are they financially supporting that person? So
right.
I don't think in this situation, be it a boyfriend or a girlfriend, that that's going to make a difference as far as what the court's going to look towards. I think the court's going to look towards, is that person providing financial support to the ex-spouse so as to alleviate the alimony burden? So, and that is a very, very, very interesting question, and one of those ones that we get a lot of very interesting questions, and I thought that one was kind of had a double-edged sword to it as far as just two issues. But again, very nice, very good.
Well, this this question was submitted through the lawchat247.com website. William posted the following: "I have a personal injury claim pending, and it's about ready to try and settle with the insurance company. My lawyer says my claim is worth about $25,000, and that if the insurance company offers me that much or close to that, I should settle the claim. He's not a TV lawyer. Based upon the lawyer TV commercials I've been seeing, I think my claim is worth a lot more. I think I may have hired the wrong lawyer. What do you think?"
Wow. And this question covers a lot of different areas. And let's just start with the basics of evaluating a claim. When we're evaluating an injury claim, the ultimate arbitrator of any personal injury claim is a jury. And what we look at when we have clients and we're representing them on an injury claim and we're submitting the claim to the insurance company, before we ever demand a penny from the insurance company, we do an evaluation of that claim. Our evaluation is very simple. It's based upon what do we think a jury of 12 people here in Mobile and Alabama would do with this case once they heard all the facts. That includes what would they agree that the other party was liable or responsible for the accident? What are the damages? Are there issues on the causation? In other words, was there a big delay in care that gives would give the insurance company's lawyers a wiggle room? What we bring back to the client is our assessment. Here's what we think you could realistically expect from 12 people in Mobile County, Baldwin County, wherever wherever the case is going to try. If it's in Florida, it's different. In Mississippi, it's a little different. But we're bringing our assessment as to what we think they could realistically expect. And that becomes the benchmark when you make a demand with the insurance company. In other words, if I went to a client and said, "Look, we usually give a range. And we say, okay, I think your claim is worth between $20,000 and $30,000. Here's all the factors. Here's how we get there." Then we start negotiating with the insurance company. And obviously, if we get them in that range, if that's where they stop and say that's their best offer, we can tell the client, hey, take the money and run. It doesn't make sense to spend the time and energy in court to basically get the same amount. If the insurance company were to come in and offer substantially lower than that, we'd say, hey, let's go to court. If it's a lot more than that, we say, hey, take the money and run. We don't think you're going to do that well in court. So And we have to look at, and sometimes it's hard, but we have to look at how the case will present, mm-hmm. how the client will present, how will a jury perceive that person.
Absolutely.
And sometimes we had one client that I loved him to death. Mm-hmm. He was just gruff. Mm-hmm. And I finally mm-hmm. had to tell him, you know, I love you, but a jury yeah. may not like you. Mm-hmm. You're a little rough on the edges, and you may be offensive to some jurors, and that may impact on mm-hmm. what they do, and how much your verdict may be. But again, so we have to tell the hard truths and look at the things objectively to get to that evaluation number. Most injury lawyers will give you that evaluation in advance mm-hmm. before settlement negotiations start so that you know what the benchmark is. Now, it doesn't always happen that way, and just because we do it one way doesn't mean it's wrong for other lawyers that may not do it that way. But I want to fall back in the last minute or two here to the TV lawyers and these ads where people who look perfectly fine stand up and say, Lawyer X got me $5 million.
Right.
And,
mm-hmm.
Or, you know, they look perfectly happy and they're jumping around and they're like, Lawyer X got me $400,000. You have to understand, we have very limited regulations on lawyer advertising in our state.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you throw a couple little disclaimers down at the bottom, mm-hmm. It's going to be okay. In fact, in our show, you heard one of those disclaimers. We have to always say no representation is made that the quality of legal services to be performed is greater than the quality of services of other lawyers. Mm-hmm. Pretty much as long as we say that, we can say anything. And a lot of times, if you look at some of these TV ads where they have astronomical numbers, you stop it and look at the fine print. And it's like not a real case
mm-hmm.
or actor portrayal or not similar to all cases or just all kinds of different disclaimers.
Mm-hmm.
They go by so quick that you don't see it. But again, normally, if somebody's getting paid six figures, $100,000 or more.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, they're going to be hurt pretty badly.
Right.
And there's a direct correlation on the severity of injury and the amount or the value of the recovery of the case.
Mm-hmm.
Jurors, despite what a lot of people think, jurors are really smart. They do a good job.
Right.
You generally don't go into the courtroom with a broken fingernail and come out a millionaire.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work that way. And sometimes we have clients that want to go to try it and play what we call the litigation lottery, and I have to remind them it's a courtroom, not a casino.
Right.
You know, it's the object is to get fair and reasonable compensation, and jury verdicts vary from state to state
mm-hmm.
to state depending upon the various laws that the jurors have to apply to the case. So in this situation, I don't think this person made the wrong decision. I don't know the details of the evaluation and why the lawyer felt like the case was worth $25,000. But if that lawyer's been working on this case and
mm-hmm.
has the experience and understanding,
that's mm-hmm.
then that's, I think, a sound evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
And not the situation where you necessarily want to change horses in the middle of the stream.
Right,
so.
Right.
All right. So good three questions
yes.
there. And we're coming back for our final segment. We have a can I sue my lawyer question in the can I sue segment. So a very interesting question. Y'all come back and join us after this break.
Welcome back to Law Chat 24/7. To be a part of the show and to have your legal questions answered, email Mark Wolf. Details online at lawchat247.com. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Wolf and Marion Boatler.
And welcome back to our final segment. I'm attorney Mark Wolf with my host, Marion Boatler.
Hello.
And we just ended up a very interesting discussion during the break, too, about jury verdicts.
Right, and I'd want to know a little bit more about the jury verdicts in Alabama.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting because we were talking about that. The jury verdicts in Alabama tend to be among the lowest in the country,
mm-hmm.
and it's not because the people who sit on juries mm-hmm. in our state are not compassionate or not caring. It is that the laws that they have to apply and the procedures that are applied tend to favor the insurance companies.
Mm-hmm.
And we have what a lot of people consider to be very, very pro-insurance laws, that when you're sitting as a juror, you get instructions, you're told certain things, and you have to apply those laws mm-hmm. to the facts. And it's one of the reasons our verdicts tend to be very low in our state. Again, it just, you know, we have to, when we're evaluating a case, that's something we have to look
right.
at.
Right.
A case in here in Alabama, it may be worth $30,000. Over in Mississippi, it may be worth $40,000. In Florida, it may be worth $50,000 because of the difference of the laws that are applied by the jurors when they're sitting on the case. So,
interesting.
Yeah. All right, we're moving into our final segment. We have
This is, you ready?
Yes.
All righty. This is from Alex in Grand Bay. He has a question about suing a contractor. He asks, I just discovered that my contractor from 20 years ago did not use the high-quality lumber I asked for when doing an addition to my house. I've talked to several lawyers, and they say too much time has passed. But I just discovered this and don't think it's fair that I can't sue him. What's going on?
Okay, and this is a good question because mm-hmm. it involves two legal principles. One is the statute of limitations, and the other is the statute of repose. The statute of limitations is generally the time period you have to bring a civil action or bring an action against somebody who has wronged you. In most negligence cases, it's a 2-year statute of limitations in Alabama. It's breach of contract. It's 6 years.
Mm-hmm.
But most statute of limitations in all states have what are called discovery provisions, meaning if you don't discover the negligence, then the statute or the time limit doesn't begin to run until you discover the problem.
Hmm.
And in this case, I think the gentleman is concerned because he just discovered this, mm-hmm. even though it may have happened 20 years ago. However, a lot of states, including Alabama, on construction situations, have what's called a statute of repose. And that means after a certain period of time,
mm-hmm.
no matter when you discovered it, it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the statute of repose is just basically to have a cutoff where saying at some point,
right.
we're just not going to try to let people bring lawsuits from things that may have happened so long ago and basically clog the courtroom with past problems that may be very, very difficult to prove. And in this state, we have a 13-year statute of repose related to construction
okay.
issues and problems. So that's why he's having a hard time getting a lawyer to
right.
handle that case. So, again, difference between a statute of limitations and a statute of repose.
So you said for contractors it's 13 years?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So, all right, we're moving into can I sue?
Yes. Okay, this question is about a lawyer. It says, my lawyer messed up my case. He told me I should not testify at my trial for theft of property. I didn't testify, but I wanted to because I knew a lot of dirt about the state's witness who said I stole her property. I was found guilty, and now I'm waiting sentencing. Can I sue my lawyer for legal malpractice?
All right. This is a good question from the standpoint of, you know, under criminal law, the defendant does not have to testify. And a lot of times, and I did a little bit of criminal work when I first started practicing 30-something years ago. And the question always, do you want to put your client on the stand?
Right.
Because juries do want to hear from the defendant. Mm-hmm. They want to hear the defendant say, hey, I didn't do it. But there's also certain risks that go with putting a witness on the stand because whenever you testify, your credibility is an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And normally, past bad acts are excluded. So in other words, if this gentleman had been convicted of 2 or 3 prior theft of property cases or theft-related cases, and he took the stand, the state could not introduce that as long as he did not take the witness stand. But once he gets on the witness stand
mm-hmm.
and his credibility becomes an issue, then they can get into and impeach his credibility
right.
with those prior convictions. So If a client has some prior convictions that you don't want the jury to know about,
right.
then you're not going to let the client take the stand. Or quite honestly, if you just think the client's not going to make a good witness
mm-hmm.
and be subject to aggressive
cross-examination
by a good district attorney or prosecutor, you may not want your client on the stand. So that is really what falls into what we would call a discretionary decision by the lawyer, not necessarily a malpractice situation. A malpractice situation is basically the lawyer must not have had any type of reason at all for not wanting the client to testify. Mm-hmm. And in criminal cases, I mean, if a client wants to testify bad enough, the lawyer can put him up there, but
right.
He sinks his own case. I don't think this rises to the level of legal malpractice. Mm-hmm. It's most likely a discretionary decision by the lawyer to try to keep the client from being impeached or try to keep the client from, making things worse
exactly.
in this situation.
Yeah.
So I don't think that would qualify, but very good question. Allowed us a chance to talk about taking the witness stand and the credibility of witnesses and impeaching the witnesses. So, All right. And we are coming near the end of the show. And just as we wrap things up, you want to remind our listeners how they can get a response to their legal question in 24 hours?
Absolutely. You can go to lawchat247.com to submit questions or the LawChat 24/7 Facebook page using the Messenger app. Or just send an email directly to mark@brwlawyers.com.
Very good. And as we start to close things down, just a reminder, consultations at our firm are always free and at no charge. And we can do it by email, by text, and we still are social distancing at the office. Mm-hmm. And we're Zoom meeting and Facebook chatting and all different ways of communicating. If you've got a legal question and would like us to talk to a lawyer, please feel free to give us a call.
Yes.
Thank you for hosting another great show.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we look forward to y'all being back next Tuesday as we move into another edition of Law Chat 24/7.
Thank you for listening to Law Chat 24/7, sponsored by Boatler, Richardson, Wolf, Injury Lawyers, proudly serving the citizens of the Alabama, Mississippi, and Florida Gulf Coast since 1987. Learn more at brwlawyers.com. If you need a response to a legal question, go to lawchat247.com. That's lawchat247.com. And submit your question. And be sure to join us next Tuesday evening at 7 for another edition of Law Chat 24/7, when we will continue to review and discuss legal issues that impact you and our community.